thank these three for coming with me. Baltimore traffic absolutely sucks around 5 o'clock, and that's what we had to get through. And I love speech meetings. This is all we have in Bel Air, unless I'm speaking at them, because then I got 30 hours in a car to think about what I'm going to say, and then forget it all when I get up here, right? And I also love speaker meetings because when I'm in them and I'm not the one speaking, I don't get to sit there and think of every single thing I get to say if I get called on. And I actually get to listen to what the person's saying, right? And how I got here is last week, me and my sponsor, we traveled to D.C. to a meeting where I met this guy named Lewis who spoke here 2 weeks ago. And he just so happened to tell me, he asked me where I was from, and I said Winchester, Virginia. And he's like, I'm speaking there tomorrow night if you want to go with me. And I was like, sure, why not? And I get here, and through my story that I'm going to tell you, I got set up by the task force in the Wells Fargo parking lot over there. And that's exactly where we parked for the meeting, right? First time back for AA in Winchester, we parked in the exact parking lot where I got set up at. And 2 weeks prior to that, this girl from here that I used to like run with asked me for help. She said, I can't stop getting high. I know this is AA, but her experience is getting high, right? And she said, I can't stop getting high. I feel like I'm either going to die or kill myself, and I need help, right? And I'm 3 hours away. I try my best to do that, but she keeps going. And when we get here, after we park where I got set up and walk into here, she comes in late. And, like, it completely made sense. Like, God uses you in ways that you'll never, ever expect. I met this guy the night before. He brings me exactly where I'm from, where everything happened to get me to where I'm at today. And then to help the girl that somehow we connected through life at the exact same moment. That was the first AA meeting ever. She just so happened to be here when I was here. And what progressed from that, we took her out to eat, where we went out to eat last week. And I tried to get her a sponsor here, but she ended up traveling to Bel Air to read the book with one of my good friends, and which is amazing. And then Patrick's his name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Patrick asked me to speak, and that's how I got here. And so basically, let's say my experience, strength, and hope, what it was like, what happened, and how I got here. So I was born in Cumberland, Maryland. I'm from Keyser, West Virginia. And we lived there until about when I was 8 years old. I can't really remember much other than looking back when I couldn't have told you at the time, but I was driven by fear the entire time. Like, I remember, I mean, my parents can tell you that I was literally scared to death of storms and lightning to the point where I'd cry and make them or my brother come home because I literally thought I was going to die under the age of 8. It's like, why is that? And that doesn't make me alcoholic or anything, but that just shows how like crazy I was at a young age. I literally thought like the world could just kill me at any second. And so we moved to Winchester, Virginia. I go into elementary school, absolutely petrified. I get to go to a new school, and I'm around all these people that I've never met before, and I automatically start thinking of what they're thinking of me, and then in return I'm thinking about what they're thinking about me, and then my head just goes absolutely insane. And I think the first night, or the first day I was in that school, I cried until I got taken out of class because I was absolutely petrified of people. And like a week later, my dad tried to drop me off there, and I like tried to run out through the cornfield trying to get away from this place because I didn't feel safe in this place, and I was absolutely petrified of what everyone else thought of me. And looking back on it, I'm completely driven by fear. Lewis, see, I don't think he said it 2 weeks ago, but he says this thing where, like, the only reason I wore this shirt today is because I wanted to look nice for here. That's out of fear of what you people would say. The only reason I got this haircut was to look better than I did because I was afraid of what people thought about me. Like, I'm driven by it. And then the third step in the book, it says we're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-pity, and delusion. And hundreds of forms that I'm still becoming more aware of every single day. My sobriety date is January 13th, 2015. And that was in Bel Air. My original sobriety date in Bel Air was December 7th, 2014. And that was not the first time I got to AA. And through my story, again, my disease was so progressive, it ruined my life in a matter of 3 years. As ruined as it could have got, unless I died. And so I'm in school here, absolutely petrified of everything, unless I was at home where everything was fine. And because I know my parents, I know my brother, and everything's cool there. I'm comfortable there. Until I go out into the world, that's when I'm full of this fear about everybody else and what they think about me. And that is the story of my life still today. Sometimes it still happens today. And so I progress. The first time I took a drink of alcohol was, I was in like ninth grade. Me and my friend Spencer, it's awesome that my parents are here because like the pressure's on, right? They might find out some things that's going on there. So I took beer from my dad and stockpiled it until me and Spencer could drink it one night. And we stayed in my room and drank it all night. My brother was away at college at this point, and I fell asleep in his bed at the end of the night. And my friend Spencer fell asleep in mine. I woke up next to him, just covered in my own throw up. And having no idea what happened, I feel absolutely horribly physically. But my mind's saying that was absolutely amazing. I can't wait to do it again. And that's why I think from the very start that, because I knew what alcohol did for me, it gave me this effect that some people say it's like taking a breath for the first time, or it's like you were living in water the entire time, and it's the first time you like surface to take a breath. And it took away all that fear, took away that thought that everyone was thinking about me, and it made me not care at all what anyone's thinking about me. I felt a part of it finally in life. And so I wake up next to him, completely feeling like shit. And can you cuss here? So I felt like absolute shit, but my mind goes, I can't get caught. I'm petrified of getting caught. I'm petrified of punishment and everything. And so what I do, I don't steal a lot at once. I just take two or three each day for a week until I have enough to do it all again the following weekend. And we do the same thing every single weekend from there on out, and it progressed extremely fast. Like I said, I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous. I suffer from alcoholism, and that has nothing to do with the drink or the drug that you take. It means when I take something, whatever it is, into my system, I cannot stop. I can't stop no matter what the consequence is, no matter what it's doing in my life. I literally cannot stop. And then I suffer from this thing that the Big Book calls the mental obsession, that if I do manage to stop, that I'm absolutely guaranteed to pick it back up again. No matter what my plan and design is to stop, I will pick it back up again. And I did not know that part. I thought if I could get through like the withdrawal of some substance or whatever it is and just get it away from me, I thought I was going to be all right. I didn't know that I was guaranteed to pick it back up again. I had no idea what I actually suffered from. And so getting that part out of the way. So I'm in like ninth grade, going into 10th grade. I start trying other substances. I was the type of person, before I even drank the first time, that I'm pretty sure I was scared. I didn't drink for a long time out of fear. Like, I had the opportunities to drink. I was afraid of what it was going to do to me. I was afraid of getting caught by my parents. And that got me to the point where I hyped up alcohol so much in my head. And when I finally did it and seeing what it did for me, it was like, well, that really wasn't that big of a deal at all. And I remember when my brother came home drunk one night and he got caught, I literally, like, screamed to him, like, you are a piece of shit. How can you do this to me? And he didn't understand that. No one understood that. But that's the type of person I was. I was so against everything that, like, I could tell you exactly why you should not be doing this. But then, like, 2 months later, I'm doing everything and anything to get it and to do it. And so 10th grade, a lot of kids in James Wood were getting their wisdom teeth out. So that was, like, my connection or plug, whatever you want to call it, to getting a bunch of opiates. It's like, that doctor prescribes that, like, let's get it. And most people didn't understand. A lot of people I went to school with was really confused while I was trying to text them every single night, being like, steal one more from your mom just so I can have it. Like, no one really understood that. And so I started doing that. I remember the very first time I took something, it was just the same exact thing. Like, it did something to me that, like, I can't describe. I'm pretty sure, like, I fainted in my class, and then, like, my teacher sort of noticed and asked me if I was okay, and I was like, yeah, I just need to go walk around, and I walked around, and then I was fine. I was like, wow, this is absolutely amazing, even though I just pretty much fainted in class. And so I keep progressing. I go through all these, like, this stimulant phase, like, I went through the rave scene. I like going to, like, Starscape and stuff when that was around. Doing whatever I can to get out of myself, pretty much. And that was the only thing I found that made me a part of. That was literally it. And the big book called it a spiritual malady, that it's this eternal problem. And the big book describes it as, like, I'm a prey to misery and depression. I am of no real use to people. And all this stuff that I was just trying to get a part of, and I would fill that void with whatever it was I could do it with. I would get, like, the prettiest girlfriend I possibly could. I would beg them for the nicest car, the nicest clothes, whatever it is, just to fill that void, to make sure everything's okay with me. And what drugs and alcohol did that was fill that void absolutely perfectly for a very long time until it stopped working. And so I'm in high school. I'm dabbling in all this stuff, and I don't think it's a problem because I can stop still. Like, I haven't lost the power of choice yet. And I go to senior beach week. I always said before I tried everything, I was always that guy that was so against it. Like, I will never do LSD, ever. And if you do, you're a piece of shit. But then I'll do it, like, a week later. Like, I don't know why I had that mentality when I was doing, like, cocaine on the side. But if you do LSD, you're a piece of shit. Like, I had no idea where that came from. But then it would only take, like, a month for me to do everything else just talk to you. And so I'm at beach week. I sort of took a problem there. I started to do Percocets rather often. And then I was that guy that was like, I will never do heroin, ever. Like, period. And when I get to beach week, heroin's put in front of my face. And I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. And I do it, and I think I was very close to overdosing. I was only there for like an hour. I got to Myrtle Beach for like an hour, and I was very close to overdosing before already. And then I swore off on that completely. I was never going to do that again because I thought I was going to die. And I was like, well, that one's the only one that is not overhyped. That one is the dangerous one, and I will never do that. And so what I did was filled that void for the rest of the week just with alcohol, because I will get it any way I can, and I will do anything to anyone, like I said, to get it. And so I come back home. I graduated. I have absolutely no purpose in life, literally at all. Like, everyone's asked me what I'm going to go to college for. I couldn't answer that question. I couldn't answer that question, like, period. I remember crying, screaming to them on the couch, and I was like, I know that this sounds absolutely insane to them, and they don't understand this, and I still don't really understand it today, because now I can't replicate that thinking that I had back then. But when I was like, I don't know what the point of life is, like, you guys go to work and you come home. Like, if that's all that life is, I want absolutely nothing to do with it. Like, literally, at all. I want nothing to do with it, and I will do whatever I can to give me a purpose. And my purpose was to go out and get as high and drunk as I possibly could. And I did not know that I was feeling something that I didn't even know that existed. I just thought I liked doing it. And so I'd go to community college anyway. I feel like it was just to please people. I had no reason to be there. I had no idea what I was doing with myself. And I did pretty good through community college. I developed this really strong habit of opiates, but I could manage it pretty well. Like, I had sources of money. They didn't really know what was happening with me yet, and it's a lot easier when no one knows what's happening. And so I go through college, or community college, for 1 year, and then I think, this is all my thinking. My thinking does this. I was like, I just need to get away from Winchester and where I can get everything, and then I'll be okay. The big book, you read the second pertinent idea that no human power can relieve our alcoholism. And I didn't know that. And luckily, I got to try absolutely everything before AA to prove that point to me. And I did that, like, geographical change. I got accepted to WVU, West Virginia University. And for some reason, I thought the biggest party school in the country would fix me. So I went there and just got away from the pills, I'd be okay. Even though I'd still probably drink myself to death, but I was convinced that would fix me. That would absolutely fix me. And I go to West Virginia. I make it 20 days. I got the apartment. I went to class for like 3 days, and I was only in Morgantown for 20 days until I randomly packed up all my stuff and went back to them and finally confessed what is going on with me. And I was like, I had a girlfriend at the time. She was absolutely perfect, like 4.0 student in high school. She was about to graduate. And I go home to them finally, and they think it's a problem with her, and I finally tell them that I can't stop doing what I'm doing. It's absolutely ruining my life. I don't know if it stopped working then. I don't think it did. It still did what it did for me. I was just like running out of resources to get it, so I started getting very, very miserable and depressed. And so I come back home, and I don't even know what I suffered from, so I don't know how I expected them to know what I suffered from. And so I asked them for help, and basically I was just like, lock me in this house until I get this stuff out of my system. And I did that probably like 10 times throughout the next year. I would come clean to them and then pretty much detox myself. I could get through the detox very, very easily. It sucked during it, but I was just like, and I would like, what if, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, gloat to my friends, be like, look what I'm doing, I'm on day four. Like, look at me, like this is it, like I am absolutely done. And then what I didn't know at the time, I didn't know about that guarantee that I will pick it up again without another solution. And I would hit like day seven and feel absolutely fine again. I feel physically perfect and feel really good about myself that I got to day seven. And then just be like, well, actually that wasn't that bad. The big book calls it the peculiar mental twist, where I don't have the sufficient force to bring to memory the pain and suffering of a day, even a week ago. And I really resonated with that part of the book when I first read it, because after day seven, it was just like all that misery that I just went through completely went out the window. And I was just like, well, that actually wasn't that bad. If I could get through that, I could get through it again. So why not do it again? Like, that was my thinking. So I did it again and did it again and did it again and did that for about a year. And like the unmanageability part, how I'm no use to other people. Like, I got fired from some jobs. I quit. My dad tried to hire me. I could barely show up for him. I was just absolutely horrible. Horrible in every single aspect of my life. I absolutely sucked. I would then sleep to 4 p.m., not having a text on my phone, being like, come get it, and then be like, what's the point of even getting out of bed today? Like, that's what my life was. Or trying to get through a night and then seeing the sun come up and be like, I still haven't gotten sleep. Like, this is absolutely miserable. And I, like, the big book says it's a self-inflicted crisis, and that's exactly what it was. But I didn't know that, like, I've always relied upon my mind to think me out of something. And I didn't know that that was insanity. Like, I'm relying upon something to keep me away from, like, I'm relying upon alcoholism. Alcoholism centers in the mind. I'm relying upon alcoholism to keep me away from alcoholism. And that just does not make sense. It doesn't fly. I was setting myself up for failure, and I had no idea. And so progress to the point of I swore off from heroin completely. But within one day, it was a really bad day. I couldn't find anything for myself, and then heroin hit big in Winchester. It hit real big, and I was just like, screw it, let's do it. And then I went into this everyday cycle, like 6 hours at least round trip to Baltimore every single day for a year. Like, it was absolute misery. Like 6 hours every single day at least in a car. And then just go home and sleep, wake up, get back in the car, go again, come back, sleep. That was my life for a year. That's literally all I did. And that progressed to the point where I don't even know how to explain it. I can't put words to the misery I felt. And I was running out of resources, like I said, to get it. And they were finding out about it. And it was August 14th, I think, in Wells Fargo parking lot. It was August 14th, 2014, is when I got set up by someone wearing a wire. And I got two distributions of heroin for it, and I got taken to jail, and they let me back out immediately. And 2 weeks, and at that point, when I was in jail, I was never been to jail. I was like 115 pounds, 6 foot tall. Like, I do not belong in jail. Like, I'm just a scared little kid that was just in college less than a year ago. Like, what happened to my life? And so I get in jail, and then I get out, and I'm like, I will absolutely never do this again. Now it's actually time. I actually have some consequences to make me stop doing this, so let's stop doing this finally. And what that happens is it takes like 3 days to talk myself into doing it again. Then 2 weeks later, I get two more distribution charges. that I don't know about. They didn't arrest me right away. They didn't charge me right away. That was September 2nd, 2014. And when I sort of knew that something happened, but I didn't think I was going to get in trouble for it, but I went to them finally, like, I need to go to rehab or something. I need to get away from here. I need help. It was like the first time I actually helped or asked for outside help. And I was taken to Shippensburg, Pennsylvania for a rehab. I went through 17 days there, and I learned a lot. That's one thing I can do. I'm really good at rehab. I can learn how to tell you what you're doing wrong in under a week. I can tell you exactly what I need. I can tell you exactly where I need to go after this. I can tell you everything. All these plans and designs in my head that I think is going to keep me away from the drink or the drug. And I remember they had like the 12 steps on the windows all around this huge like community room. And I'd always read them and just be like, why would anyone do that? Like, what is it going to do for me? That like mentality. And I was only there for like 17 days or something. My insurance got cut off because I wasn't actually doing anything in there. I was just taking a lot of knowledge in. I wasn't actually doing like the assignments they gave you. And they said I wasn't contributing to the program, so they wanted me gone. And they sent me up to this halfway house in Harrisonburg, Pennsylvania. And I go there, and it's the exact same scenario. I'm like talking to a counselor that's trying to figure out my problems. And what my problems at the time was, about a four-step, was, well, my parents do this to me. My brother does this to me. My ex-girlfriend is probably going to leave me. Or the girl was actually already gone. But I'm sure there's a girl back there that is going to ruin my life. I'm just positive of it. And all this stuff, not telling her, like, she would try to say it was all because of the drugs and the alcohol, and I was like, nope, not at all. Like, I'm sober as I'm ever going to be right now, and I'm perfectly fine. I'm ready to go take on life. And it took, like, I don't know how long I was there. I was there for, like, 2 weeks, something like that. And somehow it schemed up this way, since I knew what all my solutions would be, is to get some kid that was in the Shippensburg rehab to me to bring heroin to the house. And I do it, and that was on family day, which was, I mean, I can't, like, put words to, like, this pain that I put them through and myself through. And it was on family day. They haven't seen me, like, in a month and a half, and my brother and my mom just made, like, a 3.5-hour drive, and they're pulling into the parking lot as I'm getting drug tested and kicked out. And I walk outside, and I have to be like, we have to go home. Like, I have nowhere to go. And the only fault that they had that I know now is loving me way too much. Like, that is the only fault of my entire family, is just loving me way too much and wanting to do whatever it is to protect me. So they take me back home, and I make up all these new rules that I need to keep me away from it again. And then I just get back to doing it all over again. I get on the 6-hour round trip to Baltimore again. And then December 7th came, where I fell asleep in my bed and then got woken up to by my mom saying there's a cop here and they won't talk to you. And I go downstairs and he's like basically arresting me, saying that you have 2 more distribution charges from back in September. And they finally like came through and I got to arrest you and you should be out on bond tomorrow. And I believed him, even though he was just trying to reason with me. And I go in there and the judge instantly declines bond. I'm detoxing in jail, and like the phase one here is like 20 hours out of the day you're just in a bed. It was absolutely horrible. You get absolutely nothing. You don't get water. Like, it sucked. It was absolutely horrible. And so I was told that the last person that had this many charges was in, you'll probably get like 4 or 5 years out of this. And like I said, I'm very small and do not belong in jail. That was my reasoning. I was like, how did this happen? Like I said, I usually was a good student. I was just in college. Like, what just happened to my life? I was fine, and now I'm in jail looking at like 5 years in prison. And it took, like, at first my lawyer even said he couldn't get me out, and then I was in there for like 10 days, and my mom and my lawyer got a deal with the judge to release me to another treatment center in Bel Air. And I had the complete 90 days there. And that's exactly what happened. They released me, and I got to Bel Air. Like I said at the beginning, my original sobriety date was December 7th, but my sobriety date now is January 13th, so obviously something happened. So I get to this rehab in Bel Air. It's really, really different. It's not like the typical one. It's like you have group in one building and then these houses all around the town that you live in. And I was really confused. It's like this little town that has churches at every single corner. It was very foreign to me and I had no idea what was going on. And I get there, just get thrown into Bel Air. And I'm in this place called MRP. And the guys in my house, thank God they were there. They were absolutely awesome. It was like commiseration. It was like we were so miserable we made it fun. You know what I mean? And so I meet this kid named JP. Me and JP turned into like he was like my best friend I've ever met in my entire life. And meet him and we start doing everything together. And then you're in like a lockdown house for like 30 days and then you go into this other house and let you leave for the next 60. And I was in this house and JP leaves, he's 10 days in front of me, so he goes on to the other house and I'm in this house and my mom, I asked my mom, because this is kind of out of jail, I had to get all my stuff to Bel Air. I had nothing. I had like 3 hours to get to Bel Air and I couldn't go home and get my stuff. So she mails me clothes, my wallet, everything. And I told her, I was like, Mom, I found dope in my wallet last time when I was in Harrisonburg. I was like, please check that wallet to make sure there's nothing in there, because I always like left little baggies around that I was like trying to sell, I guess. And and then she mails me this wallet, she checks it, she pulls everything out of it, and there's nothing in there. When it gets to MRP, the guy in charge of MRP goes through all the mail too, and he doesn't find anything. And when I get back home, I find a bag of heroin in the wallet again. And this was January 13th. This was at, it was like 6 o'clock at night, right before we were about to go to a meeting. And for the first 20 days in there, I did absolutely nothing. I did literally nothing at all. They told me to get a sponsor. I didn't get a sponsor. They told me to get a home group. I didn't get a home group. I did literally nothing. And so I have this, and you know when you get drug tested in MRP, it was every Monday or Wednesday. I still know it. I made sure I memorized that, and this was a Tuesday night. And I still don't know how this happened, but I know I had a drug test the next morning, and it only takes 4 hours for my brain to talk me into doing it. And this time I seen what powerlessness was, where I did lose the power and choice. And I saw the mental obsession that I was absolutely guaranteed to pick it back up. Because when I saw it, I wanted absolutely nothing to do with it. I can't stress this enough. This experience was absolutely crazy. I wanted literally nothing to do with it. I knew that I'd go right back to jail the very next day if I did this, as soon as I got kicked out. And wanted literally nothing to do with it. And it was like my body just like did it, with my mind telling me all these reasons on why you shouldn't do it. And I did it anyway. And somehow, it was probably, I don't know why, I don't know how, but I tried to cover my own tracks. I tried to drink water in group until we got drug tested. And somehow I did manage to pass the drug test. I don't know how. I have no idea how. And so after that, I'm absolutely petrified. My mind starts spinning, starts going. And then my head tells me that this whole establishment is against me. And what every time the guy that worked in the house, his phone rang or vibrated, I thought, like, this is the moment of truth. This is when he's going to say that they know and to pack his stuff and leave. And that went on for like a week. I was absolutely petrified to talk to anyone because I thought they all knew. And that they were just keeping me there until like the cops showed up to take me or they showed up to take me. I had no idea what was going on. And I went to one of the people that worked there. His name was Rob. And I asked Rob for help, and he worked there, and he couldn't help me. So he gave me one of his sponsors to help me. And I still thank God every single day for this kid because he only had 7 months, and he was absolutely on fire for AA. And what this kid did with me was, he would come to the house. I would not call him. I would not do whatever I was supposed to do. I would not even call my sponsor. He would just show up and be like, Seth, we're reading this book together. And that's exactly what we did. He took me through the doctor's opinion. He took me through, there was a solution, more about alcoholism, we agnostics, the whole nine, up until like the third step. And This is when I'm still so full of fear. I still haven't done a fourth step and absolutely petrified of everything, like literally everything. When they came to visit me, they were trying to give me a job. They were trying to get me to fill out applications, and I'm almost like 21 crying in the car being like, I cannot go in there to talk to anybody. Like, that full of fear. I could not do it. And like, this kid just kept coming. Just kept coming to me. I don't know. I was his very first sponsor. He probably loved it. That's probably why I did keep coming. But he kept coming, and he explained so much to me. I barely remember what he even told me. I remember what my second sponsor, I remember everything he told me. But I just remember doing a fourth step with him. And I, like, balked at the fourth step for, like, a month. And this member, JP, my best friend, I was, like, trying to beat him through the steps at this point. So he would be telling me to write my fourth step when he didn't even write his. And he sat me down and made me write mine when he didn't write his. And I feel like still to this day that I was literally forced through the steps. I don't really like the word willing because I was not willing to do anything. I was like forced through it. And I joined this home group called Primary Purpose, and that was exactly what this kid's primary purpose was, is to help someone else get sober and carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's exactly what he was doing. And so I was forced to write my fourth step on my best friend, and then this kid just showed up after I didn't call him again because I was scared to tell him anything. And he brought me to his living room, and we did our fifth step. And pretty much, I feel like the spiritual awakening can happen anywhere in the steps, and I feel like mine happened after the fifth step, where I thought the entire world was against me. Everything that the third step talks about, this selfishness and self-centeredness, and how I'm trying to manage the entire show, and trying to get you to do anything for me, and I'll either be mean, egotistical about it, or I'll be virtuous and gracious about it. It just depends upon the case. I will manage anything, and I will manipulate anything to get what I want. And how I got the ball rolling by making a decision based on self that later put me in harm's way. And that was my entire life. That's why I had every single resentment and fear I've ever had, was because I did something to someone and they retaliated against me. Like, that is the story of my entire life. And then the big book says, if you could wrest satisfaction out of this world if you only managed well, if your arrangements stay put. And that's exactly not the case, because they don't stay put. So that's why I'm so miserable all the time. And I'm still trying to do this. And still today, I still try to do this. My awareness of management runs so deep that I'm still gaining this awareness to how I manage things in my life. And so he takes me through that and shows me that through my fifth step, and shows me that I was the one, that I'm the problem. The drugs and the alcohol were never the problem to begin with. There's a guy named Tom Flynn that was really big in Baltimore that said, he's passed away now, but he always said that I'm not a problem drinker, I'm a solution drinker. And because drugs and alcohol are my solution to life, that's what makes me feel a part of. And that's exactly what it was. I learned that the problem was me and everything I did to myself that I wasn't even aware of doing to myself. And I just thought it was everyone else that was coming at me. I thought the whole world was against me. And that's what the fifth step showed me. And having that on a piece of paper, like where you write where you're selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, and self-seeking, and fearful, having that in every single situation in your entire life on a piece of paper, and seeing yourself as who you are on a piece of paper, like, this was me, just the most selfish, arrogant, egotistical, but also fearful kid in the entire world that will do anything to anyone just to make myself feel better. And so I keep going. I don't think I do 6 and 7 with him. He told me, like, to go home and do the hour meditation. I didn't do it. And then 6 and 7 was like, are you willing? I was like, sure. And then do this prayer. And I was like, okay. I didn't really understand it at the time. And I wrote my 8th step, and then I got out of this, out of MRP. And I moved in with this guy named Jack. And that, my first sponsor, eventually goes back out. He told me afterwards that he feels like the only reason he got sober was to help me, which is, I think, ridiculous. But that's and so he goes back out. He's rarely around anymore. But I go to Rob, who sponsored him now to sponsor me. And Rob Reed takes me through the steps. I have like 3 months at this point, and I want him to show me how to take someone else through, because I started loving this thing. After that fifth step, I caught fire through the thing, and I fell in love with it. And Rob takes me through again. Now this is when I actually remember what was said. He talks to me about the allergy, how when I start, that craving is beyond my mental control, and I will not stop. And then when some circumstance makes me stop, I will pick it back up again, like no matter what. There is nothing that will keep me from it. And then the spiritual malady, which was that void that I'm trying to fill with drugs and alcohol, girls, money, whatever it is. And then we get to like step two, when lack of power is my dilemma. And are you now willing to believe? And I was not willing to believe. I did not believe in God literally at all. Like, none. I had no belief. I like prided myself on atheism. Like, that I don't, like, anyone that relies upon a power greater than themselves is weak, and I could do all this by myself. And all I was willing to do was believe that Rob in front of me was not lying to me. That's all that I was, that was as far as I was willing to go. And then he retook me through the third step. I wrote a new fourth step, did a new fifth step. And then he explained 6 and 7 a lot better to me. That 6 and 7 is, I mean, God is not going to remove your defects of character. Only when he sees fit in a certain situation. He might leave some, he might take some, and then give them right back. And that's all to make you useful to someone else. And, like, my ego absolutely destroys me on a regular basis. And but God, I feel like, used my ego when I was in early sobriety to help other people. Like, that's, I helped so many people in early sobriety, and that was all part of ego. That was all, like, oh, I'm right about everything, so let me go out and try to tell everybody about it. Even though that eventually backfired on me, a lot of people, like Nick, for example, we got really egotistical together, and I had 3 months, and eventually we both got harmed by it, but the only reason we got connected was because of my ego. I got retaken through the steps to give it to somebody else, and I had to go to an IOP facility to get drug tested for court, and I went into that IOP the most arrogant person in my life, and saying, I'm not here to stay sober anymore. I'm only here to help you guys out. And they were like, what the hell is that about? And, but I feel like that's exactly what I did. I sponsored that entire place for a very long time. And a lot of them are still sober today. And then sort of Nick, I passed it on to Nick, and I left that group sort of. And Nick did it too, and then we both left. But so life keeps progressing. I'm only working in ShopRite in the produce section. I was a cashier at first, just thinking I'm the absolute shit. I'm the best person to ever walk the world. And I'm only working in the produce department, right? And I'm going to AA meetings telling everyone what they're doing wrong, like that. What you just said is not in the big book, so I don't know why you're talking about it. You're probably killing somebody in here. And that's the kind of attitude I had for a very long time. I got with Jack, I got with Elliot, I got with Rob, I got with this kid named Brennan, and they're all like, you will learn from your ego, but just for now, just go get them. And they just let me do what I wanted. And at that time, I was making amends. I got to make amends to them. I made amends to my brother, which is awesome, obviously. And it's very fearful beforehand. It absolutely sucks trying to talk yourself into doing this, but afterwards, the effect is absolutely amazing. I got to drive to Richmond to make amends to that perfect ex-girlfriend that had the 4.0 in high school that I absolutely ruined her life. I got to drive to Richmond to do that, and then do like 3 more there because a lot of people went to college there that I knew. And I'm making amends, and then I rarely do 10. I love running 4 steps, I guess. I never do 10, and I still struggle with it. I'm really not good with saying something in the moment because I love justifying myself and being rational and be like, oh, I'm angry for this reason, and that's completely okay. It's probably because someone else did something that I didn't like, which is me managing again. And then 11, I try to do 11 to the best of my ability. That nightly inventory, I have like this app on my phone where I do it, and then our like sponsorship family has like this group message where you send them all through like to keep you accountable. And then in the morning, I always pray, obviously. I try to do the meditation. I try to think of the 24 hours ahead. And then 12 is absolutely the best thing in my life today. It's all I do is try to help other people and carry this. But like I said, I got miserable after a while because of this ego thing I had. And I had to start doing like humbling things because I was getting way too out of control. My ego built up so much where I thought the entire town was wrong, and I'd only pretty much go to my home group where everyone was doing it right. It like isolated me from feeling like I was so much superior than everyone else, even though then in return I got miserable. And so then some crazy stuff happened. I'm still facing court, and this is just the power of the steps. I'm still facing court, and my friend JP gets with this girlfriend, which I have nothing against girlfriends in early sobriety as long as you've been through the 12 steps. But he gets with this girlfriend, and he eventually relapses a couple times, and then ODs in July. And that's something I never want to experience again, and that's what like re-taught me to start doing this even more and more and more. And going to someone's funeral and having to explain to their mom why AA failed him is it sucks. There's no words for it. And trying to be compassionate by saying that AA didn't work for him and whatever it is. And that's just something I never want to experience again. So then that's why I literally fill my life with every single day trying to help other people. And at this time, my roommate Jack, he was taking me everywhere up and down the East Coast to speak with him. And he was speaking in Philadelphia, New York, Boston. He went literally everywhere. And I just tagged along with him. And he showed me that AA was a lot bigger than Bel Air. And that's all we did for a very long time until he got this job opportunity in Los Angeles. He moved away. And he gave me a job too, which is absolutely awesome. I got out of the shop right with you. And now I work in the treatment industry. We help get people into rehabs in Southern California. So my life went from being in a jail cell looking at 5 years in prison to somehow, which is all because of the power of God, getting me out of jail onto planes back and forth to Los Angeles. I don't know what happened to my life, and it's all because of this power in the steps. And then recently I hit this new point where my sponsor now, because Rob moved to Los Angeles also, I have this new sponsor, Brennan, that I mentioned, and he's always don't confuse the power that got you sober. And that's exactly what I fell victim to. I fell victim to the second pertinent idea again. I started literally using AA as a human power. And that is worshiping pen and paper, not taking my resentments, my fears to God. I just would write inventory after inventory after inventory, looking for the answer in another person. And until I was shown that that is not what I'm supposed to be doing, because in the steps, you don't get over your resentments until you do the resentment prayer. You don't get over your fears until you do the fear prayer. You don't mold your sex ideals until you do the sex prayer. You don't do anything unless you take it to God. You don't have the power to do anything. And I confuse this power a lot. I think I have power over a lot of things. I think I have power over how my girlfriend should act and how my sponsees should act and how they should be feeling and how I should be feeling. And I like I said, knowledge avails me absolutely nothing. And I can know that I'm managing and just don't know how to stop it. Things get crazy. I've only been sober a little over a year now, and they talk about the broad highway and we agnostics, and that broad highway, I feel like it's narrower and narrower, and you have to stay in the mechanics of AA, but you have to stay connected to the power that made all this possible to begin with. And I get that confused a lot. I get that very confused. There is no power in AA. AA only tapped me into a power that could keep me sober. It had nothing to do with AA or the person in front of me. It had everything to do with the power of God speaking through them, showing me these 12 steps that I personally think is divinely written. It's the history of AA, how Bill Wilson had this white light experience and then got the 12 steps and then was about to drink until Lois was his wife Lois said to him, Bill, yeah, you're failing with all these other alcoholics, but you're still sober. And then him finding Dr. Bob the very next day. It's I feel like that's all divinely written. And if that wasn't the case, if that didn't happen in the 30s, I would not be here today. The people that came before me and before them would not be here today. And I would never have gotten this message and be able to pass it on to who I pass it on to. And Yeah, so I'm still looking at court dates from March 1st. I feel like I had every reason since it got sober to pick back up, because people say that, the big book says that we don't drink to escape, we drink essentially for the effect produced. And what the steps have did for me was take away that mental obsession that I'm guaranteed to pick it back up, that insane idea beforehand when I do, that the drink looks like a good idea. That's what the steps are designed to do. They're designed to relieve you of the mental obsession, because if you never, the allergy will never be sparked if you don't pick it back up. The steps take away that mental obsession, that guarantee, and it gives me an effective mental defense against the first drink. And that's literally the reason why I stayed sober through all this. Like, I went through the death of my best friend, all these fights with my current girlfriend. Now I'm still looking at over a year in jail. And I feel like back then that would have been a great reason to go get high or drunk, but it doesn't even cross my mind anymore. Like, it literally doesn't exist. The Bible says we cease fighting anything and everyone, and it's in the 10-step promises, and that's exactly what's true today. It's not that it says we don't avoid temptation. Like, I can go to bars and be completely fine. I've been placed in this position of neutrality, and where I can literally, I'm a free man finally, where I can go do whatever I want. I can't tell you how many times I threw away heroin from Jack's house from roommates relapsing, and it not even fazed me. Whereas when I was in MRP, when I found it, there was no questions asked. Everything was off the table, and I'm doing it. Like, that's what the steps gave me. And then, which in return gave me so much more. It gave me a life that I can't even, I'm still confused on how it even happened and how it inspired me. Like, all I do is rob my parents, make them cry, make myself cry, shoot heroin, drink, make myself throw up, and end up in jail. That's what stuff does. And now, somehow, I was just on the phone on the way here with this mom in Texas crying over her son that can't stop helping. And what this new job has done is give me the opportunity to spread this message a lot further than even Bel Air. I get to talk to people around the nation that they're having the same troubles as I did, and I get to relate to them. And that's what it says at the very beginning of the book, where it says the only reason that we are binded together is because we come from a common peril and have a common solution. And the only person that could ever effectively talk to me was another alcoholic. And when I'm talking to these moms or these kids or the fully grown men with four kids, I can still relate with them, even though I haven't experienced exactly what they're experiencing. I can relate to the feelings they're having. I can relate to their life going to absolute shit and be able to get them help. And that's what life is today. I went to the International this past year with Elliot and Jack, which was a great experience. It was in Atlanta, Georgia. And it was there for like 4 days and whatever. And we saw this thing, this huge sign that was in front of the Falcon Stadium that said, it was like on the wall. It said, Ebby told Roland, and then Roland told Bill, and then Bill told Dr. Bob, and then thank God somebody told me. And that's literally my experience. So thank you for having me. It's been an honor. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.